Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Jim Petras. It's always great to have Jim back. Jim, before I let you jump in on the things most on your mind, including your newest article and recent ones, well, we certainly have a debate going on in Washington. What on earth do you call it? My God, there isn't a snowball's chance in hell that America is going to default on what's most important not to default on. It's debt obligations to holders of U.S. debt. Mainly rich investors, Wall Street, of course, governments like China and Japan and many others. Ordinary people don't matter. They're Welsh on ordinary people. But, you know, the debating goes back and forth. The real issue is that both sides really don't disagree so much. Beneath the scenes and backroom deals that you don't see get headlined in the New York Times, Jim, is they're cutting a deal to destroy social protections, and that'll be the way out of this so-called debacle. You can see it coming. You can smell it. They want to hammer Medicare, Social Security, probably Medicaid, food stamps, and other social protections. And that's the dirty deal that's been ongoing for a long time. One more thing, Jim, that I'll let you jump in. Nobel Committee awarded its annual peace prize. Well, I'm supremely underwhelmed by what they did, and I'm writing an article, Jim, explaining my feelings on it. Deserving honorees absolutely get passed over every time. We both know that the people who usually win these awards, organizations, are far more war makers than peacemakers, and the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons that won announced today, it certainly is a good thing to get rid of chemical weapons, but I don't know what this has to do with peace, and the organization has done virtually nothing so far in Syria. You can cite it for its mission to get rid of chemical weapons worldwide, Jim, but you could have done that last year, 10 years ago, a long time ago, but it hasn't been done. Of course, the issue is Syria right now, and the issue in Syria is much less getting rid of chemical weapons and much more stopping the war, and the people and countries and organizations involved in efforts to do that, they're the ones who should have been cited for the Peace Prize this year, but of course they weren't.
Steve, I can't agree with you more, especially on the first part of your discussion, but also on the second issue that you raised. Regarding the government negotiations with the Republican congressman, I think the whole thing has been theater. The Republican right, I'm talking about the so-called Tea Party, they're interested in eliminating the social programs, including Medicare and Social Security, right off the bat. They don't have any qualms about writing a bill and telling us the next day that Social Security is going to be taken over by Wall Street and that Medicare is out as big government and people should look around for ways of paying their assuming responsibility and paying for their own medical bills. I think the difference is that Obama and the Democrats want to do something very similar, but gradually and in pieces. So they believe that social cuts in Medicare and Social Security and nutrition programs and children's lunches should be done gradually, piece at a time, over time, so they won't have a shock. Their main concern is a tactical one. If they went along with the massive immediate cuts, they would alienate their voting base, especially among working people, women, and others. So secondly, they also need a pretext. And the pretext is what the debt ceiling and the opening up of the federal government, so that they can say, well, we were forced into this, and secondly, we have to make a compromise, and thirdly, we had no choice. So they're playing their roles, the bad cop and the good cop, but they're basically heading toward returning the bondholders' security, and they're doing their job to lower taxes and keep wars going. And so they go through this whole theatrical production where the Republicans say you have to make these cuts now, immediately, and otherwise we'll shut down the government. And the Democrats say, no, we have to open the government, we have to raise the debt ceiling, and then we'll discuss the cuts. So it's a question of timing, it's a question of dimensions of the transfers of wealth to the Wall Street and the wealthy. These are very tactical differences in the face of their convergence on the big picture, which has been and continues to be increasing wealth at the top, lowering taxes below, lowering taxes above, and imposing taxes on working people while they get less for their money. What this tells us is the bankruptcy of the two-party system and American institutions, political institutions. And the public, whatever the fog, recognizes this. Congress's approval rating is in the single digits. Both parties are seeing negatively. Congress somewhat more so because they're making the demands for the bigger and more immediate cuts. The president has also declined, and people feel there's no leadership defending their interests.
Well, Jim, I absolutely agree with all of that, and the way you started off calling what's going on theater, it absolutely is theater. It's a complete charade. I mean, the two-party, America doesn't have two parties, Jim. America is a one-party state. It's a duopoly. And, of course, the money and interest control everything, and that means the boys up in Wall Street. I mean, they recycle their people in and out. We've got a new Fed chairman that will be coming in, I guess, around February 1st. It would be February 1st. Janet Yellen. Confirmation will be rubber stamped. There's no question about that. And I wrote an article I sent you this morning, Jim, saying Yellen's Fed is sure business as usual. Absolutely. I was astonished that even some decent people, a few that I respect, were praising the nomination of Yellen. I just can't imagine what's going on in their heads. I mean, she's the same as all the rest. Her demeanor, her talk, her body language may be a little different than some of the others, but the policies are the same. I mean, she's a hardliner on everything that's gone on since the crisis broke in 2008. And as far as all the war issues, well, you know, her only involvement in war is she keeps spending money to let the dirty business keep on going, and she very much wants to do that. But I agree, Jim, we have a charade going on, we have theater, and as far as the major issues that America is involved in, corporate empowerment, war and peace, things like that, the police state apparatus at home, Republicans and Democrats are 100% in lockstep. There literally isn't a dime's worth of difference between either party, and Obama is the worst of the lot.
Well, it's hard to sort out. It's quite a difficult decision to say who's the worst. Obviously, Obama's very much up there, but the whole charade of congressional leaders, Boehner and so-called hardliners and the softliners, they're all in this together. And what's decisive in all of this is we have deficits, but nobody discusses the source of the biggest source for those deficits is not social spending. It's the wars. We've had five or six simultaneous wars. We have spent over $1.5 trillion on Iraq and Afghanistan, ongoing wars. We've destroyed trading outlets in the Middle East where lucrative arrangements could have been made to lower oil prices by not invading Iraq, not threatening and sanctioning Iran. So if you add it all up, comes out to about $3 trillion in lost income for the U.S. economy, the U.S. Treasury. That issue of wars, imperialist wars in these countries, and large-scale allocations for military operations around the world, and NSA intelligence spending, if you put it all together, we could certainly reduce the deficit without touching the social programs that we have. We could expand the social programs, And if you look beyond the wars and militarism, which is the source of huge deficits that have emerged, if we look at the tax laws, I have before me here the today's Financial Times, and it says Google shifts $9 billion to Bermuda. Now, Google supposedly is an American company, but it has dual citizenship or triple citizenship. It has takes out most of its profits through its box, mailbox in Ireland, where the tax rate is about a quarter of what it is in the United States. But then they screw Ireland by having another box in Bermuda, so they take out their taxes in Bermuda, which has even a lesser tax rate. And so a company, which is supposedly an American company, pays a fraction of what a secretary or a salesperson in a supermarket or an ordinary factory worker pays. A factory worker pays about three times what the Google is paying because of its manipulation of its home office.
Oh, indeed so. Offshoring trillions of dollars. I remember writing about that, Jim, where nobody really knows how many trillions of dollars are stashed overseas and not paying any taxes on it. I mean, extraordinary amounts of money, and of course, the ordinary people get whacked all the time, and whether it's a company like Google or probably all the major U.S. corporations and so many rich people, mainly in Western countries, but also dictators that have stolen their wealth. Well, they steal wealth their way, and Wall Street steals it its ways, and other elements in corporate America and corporate Europe, they do it their ways. I mean, this stuff goes on, and nobody worries about collecting taxes from them. I want to write about that again,
if
Jim.
If we had these, if we blocked these tax outlets, and we eliminated imperial wars, Steve, we could reduce the work week, pay all of our debts, maintain or extend the social programs so everyone gets coverage in the United States at a minimal cost, so that the real sources of all these big problems we're supposed to be facing, deficits, trade imbalances, etc., are politically costly. That is, they're the result of policies of having a loose tax policy regarding where profits are taken out. We have it because of wars that are motivated in large part by a military and Zionist agenda, and no one points to these issues. There's no debate saying, look, we can deal with these problems by changing the tax laws, by changing our foreign policy toward trade and investments rather than military invasions and prolonged sanctions and destabilization. And the end result of these wars, Steve, is not to generate income for America. They're not plundering their economies. They're devastating them. I mean, look what they did to Libya. Libya was already on the verge of signing major oil contracts, and the U.S. invades with the NATO countries. They bomb them into the Stone Age to such a point that the country has no government today except gangs that are using their arms to pillage the country. The same thing happened in Iraq. There's daily killings subsequent to the U.S. setting off the Shia against the Sunnis. The oil production is down. We sanction Iran so that the price of oil soars, and we run big trade deficits. We're still importing a substantial amount of oil despite fracking, etc. So there is no imperialism that's enriching America and trickling down to the workers. It's exploiting American workers and taxpayers to fund military operations that heighten world prices.
Well, again, Jim, absolutely so. I had a thought in my mind, and it left me. Oh, I know what I wanted to mention. It's awfully important to point out in all of the debt ceiling and the national debt is what we're talking about, aside from a ceiling. But in terms of America's national debt, Medicare and Social Security have zero to do with it. Medicare and Social Security are self-funding systems, payroll taxes, monthly payroll taxes American workers pay, fund the system. The both programs are completely solvent, and they would be, even though going back to the Johnson administration, the funding, the funds that ordinary Americans pay into these programs get meshed into other government spending programs, so they're used illegitimately. But again, these programs are self-sustaining. The reason America's debt is so high is because of trillions of dollars, multi-trillions of dollars, that go to waging wars, as you point out, Jim, and to providing enormous subsidies to corporations that go back decades before bailing out Wall Street began. And when you add that to it, one analyst, Neil Barofsky, who was the administrator of the TARP program, he's no longer that, but he was that. He estimated that possibly as much as $23 trillion was siphoned off to go to Wall Street. Supposedly, these are funds that have to be paid back. Ha! Paid back. Once they're gone, they're gone. I mean, this is literally the way America's run. If you want to know why America has a debt problem and a deficit problem, those are the reasons. It's got nothing to do with Social Security and Medicare, and they're not entitlements. They're contractual government obligations based on the contract that every working American signs when they pay payroll taxes, and calling them entitlements is absolutely false. Food stamps, Medicaid, they're entitlements. Those are other issues, but they're minor compared to Social Security. Well, Medicaid is not minor, but other social protections are minor compared to Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid.
Well, Steve, I want to add another swindle that goes into that. They have put a cap on how much tax they will take from the millionaires and billionaires regarding Social Security payments. In other words, a worker paying 9% on his earnings up to $100,000, and then it stops. So a billionaire pays the same amount as someone earning $100,000 or less. So that if we had took the cap off, instead of a billionaire paying $9,000 a year, he would pay $9 million a year or more, maybe $90 million a year on his earnings. And I think this $90 million is lost because we have an artificial restriction on the tax payments and Social Security. The other thing is I saw yesterday that the German government is going to introduce a financial transaction tax to finance any bank bailouts in the future. I think that's a very useful thing. So if we took the cap off of Social Security taxes and had the billionaires and millionaires pay appropriate tax, if we put a sales tax on the buying and selling of stocks, say a 1% tax, we would be floating and we would have fiscal deficits, we'd have fiscal surpluses. We would have money to fund a very extensive social web that could protect people, disabled people, poor people. We could have a guaranteed salary for everybody at a livable wage.
Oh, we sure could, Jim, and add a couple more things. We sure need a progressive income tax. I remember, I'm no fan of Warren Buffett, but I remember his saying that he pays a lower tax rate than his secretary. Now, this was some years ago. I assume it's still a lower tax rate. I mean, here's a guy, one of the richest guys in the world, and his secretary pays a higher percent of her income, I guess it's a woman, of her income than he does, percentage-wise, dollar-wise. Certainly he pays more. And one more thing, Jim, poor people, earning minimum wage or many, many times below minimum wage, and certainly not what the minimum wage should be to survive, they pay tax. They may not make enough money to pay an income tax, but they're assessed a payroll tax to fund their Social Security and Medicare. So they're paying taxes even though they can't afford to pay them. And as you point out, rich people, the richest people in America, have an obscene cap, and they get away with murder doing that. Again, the whole system is rigged to transfer wealth from ordinary people to the richest. And in an article I just wrote in the past few days, Jim, since the crisis broke out in 2007, I think it was, since the so-called recovery began in early 2009, 95% of the benefits, the financial benefits of that so-called recovery, went to the richest people in America, call it the top 1%, and the rest of the country got 5%. That's the way the system is rigged. That's the way the Fed works. That's the way the administration works and the Congress works, and you don't hear a word about this in the major media.
Yes, Steve, I think we could go on and list these things from the tax angles, but there's also the exploitation angles. You know, economists talk about the rising productivity of American workers and how productivity has not been linked to income. In other words, people are producing more and getting less from what they produce. Now, one of the things that is left out of this whole productivity discussion is the intensification of work. We have a tremendous increase in the pressures on workers in production and sales. They're told you have to produce more items in a shorter time of higher quality than before, otherwise you lose your job. And since 93% of the American labor force are not even unionized, private labor force, this is a very deadly weapon that's held over workers. So they're getting paid less. We're becoming more unequal in this country. But also the stress at work has increased tremendously. And the fact that they don't have any protection, whether it's legal or organized, has allowed this to happen, so that the U.S. now has even said that some manufacturers are returning from Asia because it's easier to exploit and get more out of American manufacturing workers than it is in Asia, where they're still they've instilled some kind of social defense of workers. Now, it's not very good at places like China, etc., but still, the temptation to come back to the United States, given the fact that they have a free hand in exploiting labor in the most flagrant way, I mean, the kinds of job protection that existed before that allowed workers to work hard, but not to kill themselves, and this is no longer the case. They work till they die.
Yeah, again, Jim, it's so true. I mean, literally, people work more for less. I can remember writing articles at beginning back in the 1970s. Under Jimmy Carter, of all presidents, there literally has been a slow-motion class war going on that picked up in intensity as the years went by, especially during the 80s, the 90s, and especially, most of all, post 9/11, George Bush Jr., Obama, literally waging war on ordinary people, and rich people have never had it better, never, never in American history, maybe short periods. Maybe the 20s, maybe some other short periods, but for a sustained period of time, and it keeps getting worse and worse, the rich in America are really doing so well, and it's probably the only time, Jim, where during what I call a main street depression, and indeed there is a main street depression going on, when real unemployment is over 23%, not the fake 7.2 or 3, it's a phony number, where GDP is very, very shaky. Even the low growth figures that are published are absolutely phony. The inflation numbers are at least three times the phony numbers published, and I like to say anybody who eats drives a car, pays medical bills, has college tuitions to pay, and other big-ticket items to have to fund. They understand inflation better than these so-called talking head economists that distort the figures, distort the numbers, lie about them, and make it seem as though everything is going on just fine. Well, for the richest people in America, again, it's never been better. But for ordinary people, they simply, most of them can't survive to get by. They need more than one job. If it's a two-family, if it's a spouse, a two-family household, two working adult household, they need both members to work, maybe each to have more than one job. And this is what it takes to survive in America. That's why we're going through a depression for these people. And poverty, poverty is at depression levels. And the other economic data are at depression levels. But again, this never gets discussed. So we've got a massive cover-up, and again, it's because America is the richest country in the world, and it's using its resources for exactly the wrong purposes, and they're causing human misery, not just in America, Jim, of course, but literally on a global basis.
I think you're right, Steve, and I think it goes into technology. We have scientists that get grants from the government. They develop new technology, new robots to do manual work. But instead of benefiting the workers, they displace workers. Workers compete against robots today. Instead of the robots taking away some of the worst aspects of work and putting workers in a better position, they functioned to reduce the number of workers, reduce the possibilities of workers extracting more value from added productivity. It creates greater unemployment. Look at General Motors today is reporting its highest profits since the end of the crisis, got bailed out with your money and my money, and now they're producing more, getting higher profits with less workers because technology and scientific innovations are used against workers rather than improving workers. We always thought that the advance of science and technology, which is a good thing, it would be good if it had a human purpose. Instead, it's simply increasing the profit rates today. And scientists never ask new technology, new inventions for what. And I think that's a problem with the scientific. They take the ploy of being neutral. Well, we don't know what's going to be, how our inventions are going to be used. Well, they should know. They should investigate and say, well, we want to design technology innovations to improve human existence, not simply fill the pockets of Wall Street investors.
Yeah, Jim, again, it's a very, very sad story. Productivity increases, workers work harder for less, few workers are needed. The best jobs in America are offshore to cheap labor countries, and the situation gets worse and worse. Paul Craig Roberts has done such important writing on this. He's explained it, and he was in the Treasury back in the 1980s, and he really is a super critic just the way you are, Jim. Oh, dear, we are out of time. The time absolutely goes by too fast. I wish we had more of it, Jim. I look forward to having you back next month, and we will continue this discussion.
Okay, keep up the good work, Steve. I'm an avid reader of your daily production.
Oh, I really appreciate it, Jim, and I absolutely read everything you write, and you teach me so much.
Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Join us Saturday, Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit. Thank you.